Welcome to the Sports Spectrum Podcast, where faith and sports collide. Here's your host, Jason Romano.
And welcome, everybody, to episode 7 of the Sports Spectrum Podcast. My name is Jason Romano. It is great to have you here today. Lots of great things happening with Sports Spectrum and the podcast. We're happy to have you a part of it. Last week's episode, a little bonus episode, episode number 6, Carolina Hurricanes defenseman Jacob Slavin. Got a lot of good feedback from that, and Jacob was such a fun kid to talk to and get to know his story. Just 23 years old, just a couple years into his NHL career, but that man loves Jesus, man. He loves the Lord, and he's been married, you know, a couple years now too, and I really enjoyed the conversation because a lot of times we talk to people who are more well-versed in Christianity or their faith or have been around a long time or have all this wisdom. And this kid is just 23 years old and getting started. But he had a lot of great things to say. The stories that he shared were really, really awesome. So please go back to iTunes or Google Play or sportspectrum.com and take a listen to the episode number 6 of Jacob Slavin. And I really like the story he told of how he met his now wife, sort of a modern blind date. I will just tease it that way, and you can go back and listen to that. Also, a great story at the end about sort of his welcome to the NHL moment when he was a rookie and being introduced to Alex Ovechkin. So that's quite the story as well. So check out the episode number 6 with Jacob Slavin. I think you guys will really like that. Also, we're doing something really cool for the first time on this podcast, and I'm excited about it. We're going to give away something to you for listening. It's very simple. So 180living.com is a t-shirt apparel company, and they've partnered with us to give away 3 t-shirts to different people who are listening on the podcast. And the simple way to be entered into winning these shirts are to go to iTunes and leave a review. So we read and see all the reviews that you leave. We are grateful for them. And these reviews actually help bring the podcast more awareness as well and allow us to be heard and seen by more people and more people to hear these inspirational stories. So leave a rating on iTunes. But when you do that, you're automatically entered into basically a drawing, which allows you to win one of 3 t-shirts from 180living.com. Now go to that website and check it out, and you guys can pick whatever shirt you want from that website. They have a ton of really cool designs and just kind of that modern look of a t-shirt, really comfortable t-shirt. I've gotten to wear a couple and they're awesome. So check out 180living.com. Find the shirt you want. Enter and leave a rating at iTunes for the Sports Spectrum podcast, and you could have a chance to win one of their t-shirts. You should buy their t-shirts anyways because they're really cool shirts to wear, and just I like the look of them. Certainly the messaging on them is awesome. So check out 180living.com for that. All right, today's episode, episode 7. Our guest today is the host of TNT's Inside the NBA. It is Mr. Ernie Johnson. He's a legend in this broadcasting industry, as a guy that I watched and look up to and admire and just love how he does his job as a host of TNT's Inside the NBA. He also does play-by-play work for TBS's Major League Baseball coverage. He's also a host for CBS and Turner's coverage of the March Madness NCAA Men's Basketball Championships. Ernie is a husband to Cheryl. He's a father to 6 kids, 4 of them which are adopted, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment. He has a brand new book out called Unscripted, The Unpredictable Moments That Make Life Extraordinary. This book is awesome. It's so detailed, it's so rich, it's so open, and it's so transparent on the struggles that this guy has walked through and how he's come out on the other end on top. And it really looks at his life and not just from a broadcasting perspective, but from a personal perspective of being a dad, being a husband, surviving cancer, raising a special needs son, just being open about his faith in the workplace. There's so much here, and we're just so grateful to have Mr. Ernie Johnson. So I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to play the music. This music is going to get higher. And then all of a sudden, we're going to welcome in from TNT, Mr. Ernie Johnson. Ernie, welcome.
Jason, thank you very much. It's great to be on with you.
It's amazing to have you here. I'm just super excited about this. I've been following you for a long time, obviously a huge fan.
working in the broadcasting business. I admire your work, obviously, with TNT, and it's really great to have you here. Writing a book. I mean, I think the title of your new book, Unscripted, is the perfect title, because it not only describes your life as a broadcaster and as a husband and as a father, but it also describes how we as Christians navigate this life sort of unscripted. It's those unscripted moments that often define us. I want to start with the book and the idea to write it. How did that process begin for you?
It actually began a couple of years ago when ESPN's E60 unit came out and did a profile on our family. Jeremy Schapp was aware of some of the circumstances that were going on with our family. We'd have six kids, four adopted, and one of them, Michael, has muscular dystrophy and is on a ventilator and has been for the last 6 years almost. And I'd had a battle with cancer in the early 2000s, and my dad and I had this wonderful relationship, and Jeremy wanted to profile that, and my wife Cheryl and I had to really think about whether we wanted to allow that kind of access with cameras into the family. And then we decided, if this is going to speak to would-be adoptive parents or folks who are dealing with special needs children or facing chemotherapy or any of that stuff, we said, well, let's do it. And we were just blown away by the piece that Jeremy put out there, and it was produced by Dan Lindberg, and it was just wonderful. And Jason, the thing is, I still hear about that all the time from people who are seeing it for the first time or see it re-aired or have come across it online. And it has spoken to exactly those people that we hoped it would. And so, it was one of these things where my agent calls and says, we've got five literary agents who are wondering if you're going to write a book. And this is something I'd always thought about. And it was, it was one of these things where my friends had said, man, when are you going to do this? And I thought, well, somewhere down the road somewhere. And, as it turns out, this was really the time to do it. And so my big thing was, look, I want to write it. I don't want to tell my story to somebody and have a ghostwriter handle the writing. I said, I love the language. I love to write, and I want to do every word. And so, that's how it had its genesis. And, it was probably a year process from, the idea and then, going about getting it done, working kind of around my work schedule when I was able to write.
Right. And then you mentioned the piece, obviously, having worked at ESPN, that piece was near and dear to my heart. And I know you mentioned Dan Lindberg, another friend of mine, Ben Hauser, worked on those. Just an amazing piece. And I can understand, I guess the uniqueness of it, because ESPN very rarely profiles people from other networks.
No, absolutely right.
So yeah. I'm just curious about how it came about and maybe where your reaction was when ESPN came calling.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised because our PR director, Nate Smeltz, came to me and said, hey, here's what, I've been talking to Jeremy Schapp, and here's what he wants to do. And I was like, really? I mean, ESPN wants to do a story on a TNT guy. and then it was just the thought process I talked about with Cheryl in deciding that, yeah, let's do this.
That's awesome. What was the toughest part of the book writing process for you? I'm in the process of writing a book myself, and it really truly is the word process. You said it was about a year, but what's been the toughest part what was the toughest part of the book writing process for you?
Well, it was, being a rookie at this, I had no idea exactly what the process entailed. I think one of the earliest things was just when the publisher Baker Books said, "Okay, we need an outline of it," and that's when you're kind of saying, what direction do I want it to take? Because this is this is the critical first step, and so you kind of outline it chapter by chapter, and I gave Baker a paragraph description of what I would do in each chapter and how the story would flow.
Right.
And then just waited for them to hopefully say, yeah, that looks good, or no, that has no chance, so start over. But actually what I had laid out to them was was pretty close to what we settled on. You know, I moved a couple of things around here and there, and so once you had the plan in place, then it was just a matter of writing and a matter of really delving into a lot of things I hadn't thought much about in a long time. And and I think that's, you know, and then you get into, you know, should I include this? Should I include that? And my wife was a great sounding board on that, because, you know, I would show her a, you know, a finished chapter, and she would say, I think you need to go a little deeper on that. And I'd say, thank you. I appreciate the input. And so, you know, it was a process of getting feedback from her and from the publisher. And then it's, you know, it's kind of a give and take, you know, here are a couple of chapters I've written, tell me what you think. And then they would send it back and say, what were you really thinking at this point? Go there, you know, and that kind of thing. So it was really a wonderful process, and just, you know, loving to write. It was great, because there were a lot of late nights where I'd start writing maybe at 10:30 when everybody was in bed, and I'd look at my watch and it was 4:45. And so, wow. it was really I just loved the process.
The book is called Unscripted: The Unpredictable Moments That Make Life Extraordinary. Our guest on the Sports Spectrum podcast is Ernie Johnson, host of the TNT's Inside the NBA. And I want to ask you about Inside the NBA. Obviously, wherever you go, I'm sure people are asking you, what is Charles like? What is Kenny like? What is Shaq like? And I'm not going to ask you that, actually. What I want to ask you is just, what is a typical work day like for you? And I know we're taping this in late April, so the playoffs and the NBA are ongoing, and I'm sure maybe it's a little different than the regular season, but describe a typical work day for you, Ernie.
When I'm working in the NBA studio, Jason, it's like in the regular season, I try to be into the studio, you know, 7 hours before we go on the air. There's just a system I have of preparation. And I kind of have the day laid out by, you know, when I'm going to update my stats, when I'm going to read the articles from newspapers around the league, you know, and when I'm going to work on the format the producers come up with. And so I kind of have the day all laid out that way. And I really feel that it's, you reach a comfort level in your preparation where that's the way you want to do it. And when playoff time comes and we're on the air basically every night, we're walking out of the studio at 2:00, 2:15 in the morning, and then I'm usually in by noon the next day, and then going through kind of the same regimen of preparation, and then, you know, you're more dialed into specific series at that point and the games you have on that night, and so that's kind of the way it works. I'm a preparation freak, man. I just, you know, that to me is what my job is all about. Doing the show is the easy part. It's all the homework going into it. That's where the work comes in.
That's what the people don't see. I, as a producer for many, many years in the broadcasting business, not just at ESPN, but in local radio, I once worked with a local host who told me, you know, you want to pretend like you have a 5-pound bag of flour and you want to put 15 pounds of flour in it. And if you only use 1 pound, that's okay. But you always want to be over-prepared than under-prepared.
Oh, for sure. And then and there's a certain satisfaction that comes in, Jason, too, when you look at a stat can tell you one thing, and then if you want to go in a little deeper on that or into a certain player, mm-hmm. and then when you get to use that nugget on the air that night, that makes all of it worthwhile, because you know going in you've got so much more than you're ever going to use on a given night. But there's a certain rewarding feeling when the information that you've kind of dug up makes its way to the air at an appropriate time when it's not forced. And then you kind of look back and say, man, I'm glad I went to the next level on that.
Absolutely. It makes it all worthwhile. We're talking to Ernie Johnson here on the Sports Spectrum podcast. And Ernie, I want to go back. I want to go back to that moment. And you write about this in the book. When you became a believer in Christ. Now, your journey is much different, I think, from many, because it wasn't until you were 40 years old that your walk with the Lord really truly began. Let's go back and tell that story that culminates really on December 10th of 1997.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, and I think, a lot of my friends have similar stories, just in terms of, you know, you grow up going to Catholic school and going to church, and you're an altar boy and that kind of thing. And then when you go away to college and you have some certain degree of freedom. You know, for me, it was like, you know, Sunday mornings is for sleeping off Saturday night. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, you're in Athens, Georgia, and you're hanging out with your friends and you're sleeping in on Sunday. And so I really kind of got away from it. And then the more I drifted, you know, I was also enjoying, you know, a degree of success early in my career where, you know, you graduate and you get a job and then you get another job at a bigger market. And then I get married and I'm, you know, and I'm kind of like, and again, being, you know, totally honest with you, my thought process was, you know, God had nothing to do with this. You know, right. I haven't paid any attention to him and I'm doing well. And so, you know, let's keep on going. And, as that continued and, you know, we adopted our first two children, you know, we had two children, then we adopted two and in 1997, my wife and I kind of looked at each other and said, you know, we should be giving the kids, I think, some kind of a, you know, some spiritual grounding. You know, we haven't paid much attention to it, Cheryl and myself, but, you know, we should do this for the kids. Because, you know, they're hanging out with kids who say, how come you guys don't go to church and how come you don't go to Sunday school and that kind of thing. And so we were going to do this for them. And we found a non-denominational church outside Atlanta called Crossroads. And the first time I went in there, I was pierced by the preaching I heard from Kevin Myers, who was a pastor at this church. And in those first few weeks, he was talking about, you know, who's the provider in your life and what are you pursuing, happiness or wholeness? And I'm thinking about these things and I'm saying, well, you know, I'm the provider and it's all about happiness. And I was wrong on both counts. And as I learned more in the ensuing weeks, I just started taking a much broader look at my life and I was having an identity crisis. You know, I was identified by what I did.
Right.
You know, that was who I was at that time. I was a sportscaster. You know, I might want to tell folks, you know, I'm a husband and father first and I'm a sportscaster later, but my life wasn't reflecting that. I was totally driven by my job. And I was like, is this all there is? You know, is my plan all there is? And if so, that's not very satisfying. Kevin Myers and I had lunch at an O'Charlie's restaurant because I told him after a service one day, I said, look, God's messing with me. You know, you and I need to sit down and talk. And so we did. And we had this lunch at this O'Charlie's restaurant in Lawrenceville, Georgia. And we joined hands and I prayed to accept Jesus Christ on December 10th, 1997. And fully aware that what I was embarking on now was his plan for me, not my plan for me. And it was a Christ-centered, not a me-centered life. And it was the total turning point of my life.
Wow. That's such a great story and such a powerful testimony. And I think it's interesting too, that, you know, you were in a restaurant with him just praying right there. And that's so powerful when people have this sort of eye-opening experience, especially spiritually with the Lord. That can happen anywhere. And for you, it was in a restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously God had been planting the seeds in the weeks before in every Sunday when we went to Crossroads and that's my message a lot of times to business people and the like. You know, I say, look, there's no age limit on this.
Right.
It's not like you say, well, I'm over 30 now. That ship has sailed. It never has. When you are able to come to the realization that there is a plan bigger than yours. And so, yeah, I was 41 years old at the time. And again, it was, you know, it's one of the greatest day of my life.
Absolutely. We're talking to Ernie Johnson here on the Sports Spectrum podcast. And Ernie, you mentioned the piece done by E60 and ESPN and watching that piece, you know, I was obviously emotionally involved as so many others were. I'm sure you heard from so many different people, but particularly watching you take care of Michael, your son, a special needs child. You said he had Duchenne muscular dystrophy, adopted from a Romanian orphanage in 91. Adoption, I want to ask you about that. It's this biblical model that God has taught us in offering us
Sure.
eternal life through his son, Jesus. But for you, it was different. It's very personal, obviously. You adopted four children, you said, including Michael. But I guess I want to ask you, because adoption took place for you with your children before and after, I think, you became a Christian. What does adoption, what does adoption mean to you?
It, on the surface, it means giving somebody a second chance.
Okay.
And it means that everyone has value. I mean, this is a our first adoption of Michael from Romania. My wife is the one who went over there while I stayed home with Eric and Maggie, our two other kids. And, you know, when Michael was brought out from this orphanage and handed to Cheryl, and, you know, this was on her first visit to an orphanage, she didn't know who she was going to meet. And the woman who handed him to her said, "Don't take this boy, he's no good."
Mm.
He had all kinds of developmental delays. He couldn't speak. He couldn't walk. His foot was totally, one of his feet was totally turned in. And there is value in everybody, you know, and I, you know, when Cheryl laid eyes on him and then she called me later that day from Bucharest and said, "I met this little boy who's so much more than we can handle." And she described him. And she said, "But I don't know if I can go the rest of my life, you know, wondering whatever happened to him." And I said, "Well, bring him home." Mm-hmm. And you know, God does that all the time. You know, it's like, here's this guy who's almost 41 years old, and he's led this me-centered life, and he's got these flaws, and God says, "Well, bring him home."
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I did in 1997, and so. You know, that's kind of been at the heart of adoption, that there, you know, that we don't, you know, that we look out outside of our own family, that we look for others that we can help. And that's been the avenue for us in the course of 35 years of marriage is, you know, how can we reach out and make a difference? And, you know, people used to joke with us and say, "Oh, there go the Johnsons trying to save the world one kid at a time." And we'd say, yeah, you're kind of right on that. And, you know, we're just, you know, we're all wired so differently. There are things that get our juices flowing. You know, for some it's mission trips and it's digging, you know, digging wells or building homes, you know, and for us it's been adoption. You know, thankfully, I can say that I was adopted too on December 10th of 97.
That's so great. I want to ask you about Michael. I have a very good friend of mine who goes to our church here in Connecticut, whose son has Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So maybe I'm asking this question specifically for him, hoping he is listening. But what is it like? What has that been like for you, not to just care for Michael? Because I got to imagine, you know, I'm blessed. My daughter, we just have one daughter, and she's physically fine, and she's obviously difficult. She's 12 years old, and parenting is not easy as it is.
Yeah, I've been there.
Exactly. But now you're dealing with Michael, and if you watch the E60 video, and we'll link to that in our show notes, that video, but you see sort of the care that you have to take care, you know, the way you have to take care of him is much different than any child, that in the way that you have to bathe him, and you have to, you know, dress him and all that. I really don't know exactly what I want to ask, I guess, other than just what has that meant as a parent for you from all different aspects of taking care of Michael, I guess, on a daily basis?
Well, you know, here's what's great about our family unit is everybody pitches in. I mean, when the schedule gets really tough, you know, my oldest son, Eric, he comes up, you know, a couple of times a week. He'll get Michael up, take him out, you know, get some lunch, just be his buddy. And Cheryl does it, and I do it, and Carmen and Maggie and everybody chips in. But what it does for me on a day when I'm going to wake up and get him going is it puts me in a great area of servanthood. Mm. You know, when you're doing everything for a child who can do nothing on his own, you can't really think about yourself. And I need that. You know, it's good for me. And, you know, we are, you know, I wake up every day and see a miracle. He's 28 years old, you know, and a lot of kids with Duchenne muscular dystrophy don't make it out of their teens.
Right.
So to be looking at a 28 year old and being able to care for him and knowing what he has done for us in the course of his lifetime, It's a wonderful place to be. It truly is.
I remember, switching topics a little bit, I remember reading in Tony Dungy's, in his book, when he was talking about how he knew that his moment after winning the Super Bowl was the biggest platform he could ever have to point people back to Jesus and share his faith. And he wanted to make sure that he seized that moment. And I thought he did a great job of that. I want to ask you about the moments after the 2016 election. And I wonder if you had that same awareness. You know, obviously that video sort of went viral. You shared your thoughts on the election from the inside the NBA set with Charles, Kenny, and Shaq right there. And I'd like to play that clip for our audience right now.
When this campaign season started, I felt like I'd been dealt a bad hand. Had these couple of choices. And there were trust issues with Hillary Clinton I couldn't get past. And there was this inflammatory rhetoric from Donald Trump, which to me was incomprehensible and indefensible. I couldn't vote for either one. For the first time in going to the polls for 42 years, I hit the write-in button. And I voted for John Kasich. And I left knowing that John Kasich wasn't going to win. But I left with a clear conscience because I hadn't settled. Number two, I'm hopeful. I watched the video today at CNN on what was going on at the White House with Donald Trump, President Obama. I was hopeful and I was encouraged that there will be a difference between the President Trump and the campaigning Trump. And I'm with these guys. We have to give them a chance. But here's the deal. I just hope that he's all in fixing the wounds in this country and the divides that separate this country. And I want to be part of that too. And for me to be part of it, I have to look in the mirror and I have to say, how am I going to be a better man? How am I going to be a better neighbor? How am I going to be a better citizen? How am I going to be a better American? How can I be a fountain and not a drain? And number three, I know you're not supposed to talk about politics and religion, but we're already talking about politics, and so I'm going to go the R direction too. I never know from one election to the next who's going to be in the Oval Office. But I always know who's on the throne. And I'm on this earth because God created me. And that's who I answer to. I'm a Christian. I follow this guy named Jesus. You might have heard of him. And the greatest commandment he gave me was to love others. And Scripture also tells us to pray for our leaders. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray for Donald Trump. I'm going to pray for all those people right now who feel like they're on the outside looking in, who are afraid at this point. Pray for them too. In short, I'm praying for America. And I'm praying that one day we're going to look back and we're going to say, you know what? That Donald Trump presidency, that was all right. But I'm praying.
I believe you seized that moment pointing people back to Jesus. And I think you did a wonderful job explaining sort of where you're rooted and where you're grounded. But were you aware of the magnitude and impact your words would have before you said them on that night?
No. And that was the amazing thing about it. Look, the thing about our show that's been great through the years, and Charles gets a lot of the credit for this because he kind of, you know, he absolutely transformed the way, you know, studio shows are done, is people have expected us through the years to weigh in on things other than the basketball game they're about to watch. And so I think there's sometimes an expectation that if there's a big story that the world is talking about, that, you know, we're probably going to weigh in on that too. And so when it came to the election, it was, you know, and I'll be honest, I was in my office that day and I was, you know, kind of wrestling with what direction I'm going to go on this. And, you know, am I going to take the safe way and say, wow, that sure was a surprise. I hope it works. And, you know, what a stunner. Or am I really going to be transparent on this and tell folks how I process the election? And that's the direction I went. And I didn't really script anything. I just kind of had a few bullet points and knew kind of where I wanted to go. But my take on that was that I viewed that just like I view everything in my life through the lens of my faith. You know, I make the analogy, you know, of slices of a pie. You know, it's not like I have this one slice that's sportscaster and one slice that's husband, and here's my faith slice that I open up on Sundays when I'm at church. The faith is the crust of the whole thing, and it's part of everything that I do. And so, you know, I was totally comfortable in just being brutally honest that, look, I don't know from one election to the next who's going to be in the Oval Office, but I always know who's on the throne. And I wasn't going to beat people over the head with my Christian faith, but I said, look, I'm a Christian. I follow this guy named Jesus. You may have heard of him. I'm instructed to pray for our leaders. That's what I'm going to do in this case too, even though this is not a guy that I voted for. Didn't vote for either of them. Didn't like the choices. So I was just as honest as I could possibly be, and then my Twitter just blew up. I mean, it was incredible that night when I got back to my office. It never stopped. And then, a couple days later, my wife and I are at the breakfast table on Saturday morning, and she's got her Facebook page open to, look at pictures of the grandkids and that kind of thing. And she says, boy, what you said about the election's got 15 million views on Facebook. And it was like, wow. Well, I guess folks were listening. But look, I knew this. Anytime you mention Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Jesus Christ in the same 2 minutes, people are going to talk.
That is very, very true, Ernie. That is very true. But I wonder what the sort of, you mentioned the reaction, obviously, on Twitter. I was one of the people that tweeted at you. There were so many people that, especially from a person of faith, there's so many different levels of emotion. I want to say, I'm proud that somebody who's a believer stood up for Jesus, and you are, but you love that, God was glorified on a stage like that and all that. But I love the way you did it. You didn't beat anybody over the head. You're not telling people what they need to believe. You're just telling them what you live by.
Exactly. And I had obviously there are people who criticize me for it, and hey, stick to sports. We don't want to hear about your politics, or
right.
I had a pretty high profile, political guy say, how naive can you be? Prayer doesn't work,
right?
And I was asked to respond to that in another interview, and I said, look, you can just tell him too. There was a time in my life I didn't think prayer worked either. But the light went on for me when I was 41. And so, it was just my attempt to be as honest as I possibly could. And I know that it did resonate with a lot of Christians, because it was like, man, we get ostracized for mentioning Jesus, and you're not supposed to say that, and you're not supposed to do that. And thanks for having the stones to do it. And then others were like, hey, do you still have a job? And it was like, it was me being as brutally honest as I could. And to a point that you made a short time ago, I walked to the car that night, and all I could think of was, after 28 years at Turner, I said, for such a time as this. And that was the deal. I've been working here for a long time, and I think I built up some equity. I wasn't this, who is this guy coming on? People, regular viewers know who I am from my work for 28 years. And it was, folks, we know each other. And here's how I took that. And it was a special night.
A couple more minutes left with Ernie Johnson. I just want to ask you off the air, the reaction from Kenny, Charles, Shaq, even the producers after that night and what was said, because obviously they said what they had to say as well, but yours and what you said was the one that kind of went viral. I'm just curious if there were any conversations with Kenny, Charles, and Shaq afterwards, or if that opened up maybe dialogue to have conversations that maybe you didn't have before because of what you said.
Charles was in Miami at the time, so we had him on the satellite on that show.
Right.
Kenny gave me a high five on the air, and a lot of the folks behind the scenes came up to me afterwards and said, "Hey, I appreciate that. Hey, that was that meant the world to me." But even if they didn't, the only way I could be me was to go there.
Right.
I wasn't going to take the safe route, and so. No, it was, and what's cool still is, I'll be in an airport somewhere and somebody will just walk up to me and say, "Saw what you said on the election. Thanks." And so, I still get that on a regular basis, nearly 100 days or so after it all happened.
That's great. I want to ask you, personally, as a believer who worked at ESPN for 17 years, I've been asked this question many times. I've even spoken about it at churches and places like that, about how I lived out my faith in the workplace. So I just want to pose that question to you. How do you live out your faith in the workplace?
Well, I think it's all on how you handle situations, and I don't you know, make a conscious effort to say, okay, how am I going to live out my faith today? It's just, I'm going to live. How am I going to react to certain situations? And, you know, it's not like I walk in to a production meeting and say, hey, open up your Bibles to Romans 8. We're going to dive in. You know, it's, I don't think you can force it, but I think you have to be aware of circumstances in your daily life where you allow that light of Christ to shine. I think at times you have to be intentional about it when the situation arises, and whether that's comforting somebody who's going through a tough time, you know, being available, you know, not being so tied up in what you have to do that you lose sight of those folks out there who just really need you to recognize them and talk to them for 5 minutes. You know, I think it's, you know, there's no real easy answer to that question, but, you know, I'm just trying to model what it means to be a follower of Christ. And if folks can see that, then I've done my job.
Between being a husband, a dad, tending to your family, all that entails, plus putting all of into your job, like you said, I know I struggled with this too, but for you, Ernie Johnson, how do you stay rooted in your faith on a consistent basis?
Oh, just knowing that that's been the life-changing moment for me, and always just with the idea that, look, the Son of Man came to serve and not be served.
Mm.
And that's what I try to always remember. It's not, what are you going to do for me today, but what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And so that's really how I try to stay grounded in it, in what is a world that sometimes seems like it's spinning off its axis, and it sometimes gets the busyness of life, you know, can try to, you know, distract you from that. But I go back to what Dallas Willard said, and John Ortberg quoted him in his book, Soul Keeping, that Dallas Willard said, hurry is the greatest obstacle to the spiritual life, and we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. Mm. And so I try to do that too, is don't be in such a hurry that you miss the folks who could use a word from you, or, you know, that's the whole thing. I'm just trying to slow down and be aware and not just be, you know, focused on what I have to do next.
My last question for you, Ernie, and I ask this to pretty much every guest that comes on the show, but what is God teaching you right now? What are you learning from the Lord right now?
Oh, I think I'm always learning patience. I'm always learning humility. You know, we live in a, you know, we work in a profession, Jason, that, you know, kind of teaches, you know, wants you to elevate yourself,
right.
You know, and it wants you to, you know, rise up the ladder. It wants you to get praise, you know, from social media. It wants you to, you know, it's all about you and your agenda. And I think he's teaching me that all the time also about, you know, don't pay attention to that. Pay attention to other folks. And I think that's the most important thing, is look outside yourself. You know, what's the Ritz-Carlton slogan was, ladies and gentlemen, helping or serving ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm trying to do. You know, who am I going to serve today? Not what's in it for me.
Our guest on the Sports Spectrum podcast is Ernie Johnson. His new book, Unscripted, The Unpredictable Moments That Make Life Extraordinary, is available everywhere. Ernie, this has been a treat. Thank you so much for taking the time, and hope to have you back on again soon.
Jason, it's been my distinct pleasure. Thank you very much, brother.
That was so cool. Having Ernie Johnson on the Sports Spectrum podcast, we cannot thank him enough for joining us. And I just thought there was so much there to talk about. He was so good. And we bring him, welcome in our director of digital and media from Sports Spectrum and The Increase. It's Raymond St. Martin. Raymond, just initial thoughts on this really great interview, I thought, with Ernie Johnson.
So many nuggets there. I'm listening to it and I'm thinking about, you know, adoption and being adopted. I'm thinking about, you know, family units and what it looks like. My wife and I have talked about, you know, adopting. We thought, gosh, if we could just have like 10 kids to pour our life and our love into. And it's amazing to think about how someone already has two children, goes out and adds four more children to his life. And one of them, his wife was told was broken.
Yeah.
That was no good. And then deciding to bring that into your life, into the most intimate life that you have, which is your family life, like your closest life, and to spend a life serving that child and for that child to be a reminder throughout your life of what it is like to serve and that I do not come first, and to learn how to serve through that relationship with that child. I was just, man, there's so much there, Jason, so much.
Well, you mentioned the verse offline when we were talking about the Son of Man, and Jesus talks about how the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and be a ransom for many. The idea that's the model that we're supposed to exude of Jesus is to serve others and to not just be taking, but to be giving, to be giving, to be giving.
And who does that? You know, when you're given so much, you're given such a great platform. I mean, Ernie Johnson could be a terrible human being very easily, but he met Jesus and he invited Jesus into his heart.
Yeah.
And his life is to serve. It's just, it's so powerful, Jason, when these pro athletes that you get to interview or that we get to interview for the magazine or that are on theincrease.com choose to get off the throne and give the throne to the one, as Ernie said, who sits on the throne, mm-hmm. to put him there in our lives. It's the most powerful thing that I experience every single time someone tells a story and they decide to elevate Jesus above themselves. It's really mind-blowing in today's world that there are men and women who make that choice, who do that, who choose a life of servanthood. It's amazing, brother.
And we see, I think there are a lot of people that have chosen that world or that walk that we don't know their story because they don't have the platform or the influence that an Ernie Johnson has or that an NFL player like a Justin Forsett has. Is somebody that has this giant platform and they recognize that. And we talked about that in the interview with Ernie about recognizing that he had this opportunity to point people back to Jesus when he was talking about the election. Like, you and I don't have that platform that's that big on that stage to say, you know what? I know who's on the throne. Like, so and that's what I appreciated so much about Ernie is, like Tony Dungy and others, he's not ashamed and he's not afraid. And I think, but he also talked about how he's earned that trust with the audience to be able to tell people about the hope that's inside of him.
Mm. And where that comes from. I mean, I think, like I was telling you offline, like my wife and I visited a new church this Sunday. We were up in Breckenridge, so we weren't able to go to our home church. We walked into this small church plant, you know, 40 people. And when I walked in, I could see and feel the love of Jesus in them. They just spent an hour in prayer together. And here we come walking in. And I felt like I belonged instantly. And I felt attracted to each person. And they felt attracted to us as we were praying and worshiping. It's this bond that we get to experience as fellow followers of Jesus. Yeah. Not just believers, but followers, meditating on his word, realizing what we're here for, and connecting in community around that is just, it's amazing. And I think that here's Ernie Johnson, 30 years at TNT. He's someone who, like you said, who does life with all of these people who are watching him, you know, around the country. Mm-hmm. And to think that God gave him that 2 minutes to reach millions of people to know the Jesus inside of him. That was that moment where his heart was really Jesus on display.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, you know, I remember when that came out and I was still working at ESPN at the time, and that was what we talked about on Mike and Mike. That was what we were talking about on our ESPN shows, was not the game, but what Ernie Johnson said after the game. And I remember thinking to myself, it's one thing to tell people what they have to believe. It's one thing to take a Bible and say, listen, if you don't believe in this, there's ramifications and scare tactics and preaching and kind of forcing your beliefs on someone. But it's another thing to simply say, here's what I believe. Here's what God has done for me. And here's what I know. So I'm not telling you need to believe it. I'm not telling you you even need to walk this walk that I'm telling you about. But I'm telling you what this Jesus has done in my life. And to take advantage of that platform to tell others, like 1 Peter 3:15 says, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in you. Do it with gentleness and kindness. And he did exactly that. It was so powerful.
Very, very powerful. And that's, I just think we're so blessed to be able to do what we do, that God's created this intersection of sports and faith, that this platform that he's created between the Increase and Sports Spectrum allows athletes and people in the world of sports to tell stories the way that they want to tell them for the first time.
Right.
As you know, someone who's worked in media, secular media, the first words cut are Jesus.
Yep.
That's the first thing that's going to be taken out of the interview. And that's one thing we will never cut at Sports Spectrum or The Increase. It's the same subjects, the same people. The same people you're going to read out on ESPN, the same people that you're going to read about on Bleacher Report, the same people you're going to see on television throwing fastballs and catching touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Finally able to express themselves and tell the stories that are in their hearts the ways they want to tell them.
I love that. And that's why I came aboard and felt really led and passionate about doing this and telling the stories through the lens of sports and faith. And Raymond, it got me thinking, we haven't really done this. This has been our sixth or seventh episode. Episode number seven was Ernie Johnson. And we haven't really mentioned to our listeners ways that they can partner with us. Now, Sports Spectrum, like you said, is a part of the Increase and sort of this network that we have of storytelling through sports and faith. And it's 100% donation based. So I just want to tee you up here and have you tell people how they can partner with us, because they really can. If they like what they've heard with this podcast, there's more than just this podcast that can really help them make an investment into what this really cool ministry is all about.
Absolutely, Jason. I mean, as a ministry, we are 100% donation based. The only product that we sell would be the Sports Spectrum magazine. And the way I like to look at that is, if you want to donate $36 to our ministry, which helps us continue to produce The Increase, theincrease.com, sportsspectrum.com, and this podcast, let us send you four magazines for your $36 donation.
Yeah, let us give you something for it.
Let us give you something for it, and let us create a magazine that is true to that mission, true to the mission to never take Jesus out, and to create a retainable piece that you can share with your children, you can share it with your friends, you could take it to work when it's time to do your fantasy football draft and look at your fantasy football notes in your Sports Spectrum and go, oh, hey, you want to check this out? Yeah. Your friend starts reading and goes, oh, I had no idea Brandon Marshall was such a close follower of Jesus. I had no idea Drew Brees was a Christian. Yep. That must be kind of cool to be a Christian. Hey, maybe I should go back to church, honey. Like, let us give you ministry tools. Let us make Sports Spectrum part of your ministry and what you can do. Let us minister to you and let you minister to others through the tools that we're providing and the stories that our athletes and people in sports world are telling.
Yeah, and it's easy. They can just go to sportsspectrum.com and they can subscribe there. You can reach out to Raymond or myself. You know, my email is jason@romano22@gmail.com. There's so many ways to just get in touch with us. Tweet at us. Facebook us. We'll point you in the right direction. And I'll leave it with one last thing, Raymond. You mentioned use it as a ministry tool. Last week or a couple weeks ago, I lead our men's ministry at the church I attend here in Connecticut. And we showed one of the videos that The Increase, which is part of Sports Spectrum's team here, made. And I saw a powerful, impacted group of men, about 40 or 50 men, watching this and really blessed by it. And so that's another way. Like, I could see Sports Spectrum being such a great ministry tool for men's ministries, for men's groups, for teens. You know, what a great, cool thing to give teen boys, like a teen youth group. And even the girls, too. It's not just a boys thing or a men's ministry. There's lots of stories of amazing women in sports that are doing great things for God. I just think it's, just wanted to give that example because I really feel like I'm starting to see firsthand how the things that these, for lack of a better word, the things that these websites and these media platforms are telling the stories, you're seeing that out into the church and how it's impacting the people in the church. So really blessed by that.
And the feedback that we get. I mean, we get to see the feedback. You know, we got an email just 2 days ago from a man who watched a Chris Carpenter video, tears in his eyes, and realized that he's been dealing with the same struggles of alcoholism that Chris was dealing with. And he'd been away from the church, and he saw that, and he's going back to church now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's re-engaging with the word because stories change lives. When you can relate to somebody that you look up to and you see them making a decision for Christ, you see them making a decision in their life to change, you think, I can too.
Yeah.
I can also change.
It's a simple word,
he
man.
He can do that, yeah. Or she can do that, I can do it too.
It's a simple word. It provides hope. You know,
so let's just keep resourcing people, Jason. I mean, you're doing an awesome job with the podcast. I think, you know, the stories that have been told up until now have just been amazing. I mean, I'm sitting down with my daughters and listening to the Mo Isom podcast tonight and just sharing it with them because there are so many lessons to be learned as we do life together as an oikos, as this digital system of people that have been put together to do life together. You know, let's take that and let's ingest it into our intimate lives so that we can share it then with the world.
That's awesome. Raymond, thank you so much. Next week on the Sports Spectrum podcast, it'll be episode number 8, and our guest is Pastor Jerry Birch from Ohio. And the reason we're going to have him on is because he is the team chaplain of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we're going to talk to the chaplain of the Cavs, Pastor Jerry Birch, and kind of get into the mindset of what it is a team chaplain does, and certainly being around LeBron James, what that's like. And I'm going to ask him, does LeBron attend chapel? I'm really curious just to know if the king himself, LeBron James, attends chapel on a regular basis with the Cavs. So that's next time. Also, don't forget, we're giving away t-shirts from 180living.com. So go and leave a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the podcast. If you leave a review, you are automatically entered into a drawing to win a t-shirt of your choice from 180living.com. We are giving away 3 t-shirts, so we're excited to partner with them. So go leave a review on iTunes for this podcast, and we will give away a t-shirt to you, hopefully. 180living.com is the website again. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sports Spectrum podcast. My name is Jason Romano, and we will see you next time.